We saw a couple of news stories late last week on how more young women than young men today rate being successful in a high-paying career or profession as one of the most important goals in their lives. Turns out the stories were based on a Pew survey that was done earlier this year. We'll talk about the survey and the meaning of the findings this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, October 22nd. The Pew survey found two-thirds of young women, or 66%, ages 18 to 34, rated career high on their list of life priorities, compared to 59% of young men. This was the first time that young women were surpassing young men in the importance they place on a high-paying career. So we will talk about this trend, what it means for traditional gender roles and for society, and we'll welcome your thoughts and questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Kathleen Gearson, professor of sociology and collegiate professor of arts and science at New York University, author of The Unfinished Revolution, Coming of Age in a New Era of Gender, Work, and Family. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So is this surprising to you at all that more young women than young men think having a high-paying job is important?
Well, it's certainly not surprising that young women in great numbers are placing importance on a high-paying career. It's a little more surprising that the number of men who also make that statement has dropped. So to the extent to which women have surpassed men, I would say it's a bit surprising, but not hugely so. We should keep in mind, for example, that young women are going to college in higher numbers than young men, that effort to gain a college degree and then go on to professional schools is greatly related to one's stress on career and well-paying work after college.
Does this signify some sort of reversal of traditional gender roles?
That's a very good question. I think the first thing to keep in mind is that any one survey or one point in time can't tell us as much as we might think it does. And it's very easy to focus on surprising findings in a survey. So we have to look in the long run and see where the trends are taking us. I think that perhaps the more important message here is that women and men are increasingly similar in their desires, both for work and for family. The very same poll also found that young women and men overwhelmingly consider marriage and parenting important. In fact, more so than a high-paying career. So certainly we can be very confident in knowing that the gender gap is shrinking between women and men on all of these issues. Whether or not in the long run women will continue to outpace men is, I think, another a different question. We should also remember that even though it's true in this survey, more women than men do express a desire for a career, the difference is not great. It's a difference of about 7 percentage points, which is not nearly as big as the amount of agreement between women and men.
And apparently the survey also showed that the share of older women or middle-aged women is growing too, saying that being successful in a high-paying career or
right.
profession is important. So just something where women are at least feeling that this is important in their lives as well as marriage and family.
Right, and because we see the numbers even higher among younger women, I think that also shows us that as new generations come of age, the commitment to work outside the home and to a steady path of work outside the home is growing with each successive generation, and there's no reason to expect that to stop. I think we can look for that trend to continue in the years to come and for the numbers to get even higher.
Mm-hmm. So should we celebrate this trend or bring our hands a little bit?
Well, I would vote for the more positive way of looking at these changes. It's interesting that when a survey says that men are outpacing women in aspirations or good jobs, that it rarely is cause for a lot of media attention. And yet when women outpace men, we do tend to focus on it more and even to wring our hands. I think this is especially true in educational attainment, that there seems to be a concern that somehow it shouldn't be that women are getting educated at a higher percentage than men. So I would certainly want to say this is certainly not a cause for great either concern or celebration. I would argue instead that the move for both women and men to stress good, high-paying jobs is a good thing, and the degree to which the gender gap is shrinking is also a good thing, and that we need to move beyond looking at these numbers or these trends as somehow pitting women and men against each other. We are living in an economy and a global world in which it's going to be important for all adults, men and women, to find both satisfying, secure work outside the home, but also to be able to build secure personal lives and take care of their families. So it strikes me that what we should be focusing on is not so much that men and women may be somehow pitted against each other, which I don't think is the case, but rather if women are and men are equally or almost equally committed to work outside the home and also want to have a satisfying family life, we need to talk about how we can create social supports and institutions to allow both women and men to do that.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about those social supports that we might need in order to do that as we continue talking about this survey from the Pew Research Survey, which finds that more young women than young men think having a high-paying career is important. We're talking about the significance of this survey and welcoming your reactions and your questions, too. If you're a young woman or a young man, defined in this survey as someone between the ages of 18 and 34, do you rate career high on your list of life priorities? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And if you're not in that age group, we certainly welcome your reaction, your questions as well on why this might be and what it means. Our guest is Kathleen Gerson. She is a professor of sociology. She is the author of The Unfinished Revolution, Coming of Age in a New Era of Gender, Work, and Family. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be cloudy with showers and scattered thunderstorms developing by this afternoon. High temperatures from the mid-50s in the far northwest to the mid-60s in the south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, October 22nd. Stay tuned. Coming up, we will continue our series of congressional forums after 7 o'clock this morning. Today, we are going to talk with the two candidates who are running for Wisconsin's 2nd congressional district. We will hear from Republican Chad Lee and Democrat Mark Pocan coming up after 7 o'clock. And we'll welcome your questions for them, issues facing Congress, issues facing the nation. Also, a reminder that tonight at 8 o'clock, we will be carrying the 3rd and final presidential debate. We will have live coverage of the presidential debate starting at 8 o'clock tonight, and we will also be following up on the debate tomorrow morning after 7 o'clock. Right now, we are talking about a Pew Research survey that found that high-paying careers are important, more important to young women than young men, according to this survey. This is for the very first time, and we're wondering why this is, what it means, and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How important is a high-paying career to you? How do you rate being successful? Is that having a high-paying career or profession, is that one of the most important goals in your life? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is a sociologist, a professor of sociology, and collegiate professor of arts and science at New York University, Kathleen Gerson. And Professor Gerson, before we talk more about some of these changes in policy, perhaps, that we need to make everybody more successful at balancing work and family, I'm wondering if you have any comment at all about whether the recession has played any part in these roles. A lot of people called it the man session because so many men were laid off or lost their jobs in the financial crisis.
Very good question, and you're absolutely right, especially during the early part of the recession. In fact, men did lose their jobs at a higher rate than women. Although as the country has slowly come back, men have also been gaining jobs at a higher rate than women, so that at this point it doesn't appear that men have been hurt worse than women by the recession. But I think even more important is to keep in mind that even though the recession was a huge disadvantage for, especially for young people, generally as they were entering the workforce and just beginning their careers, the kinds of changes that we're seeing for men and for women are really very long term. The recession, in some sense, brought them, I think, to the fore, made it clearer what was happening, and especially since you may recall that before the recession, there was a great deal of conversation about how women were opting out of work and careers. And I think what the recession did was to remind us all that that, in fact, is really not generally the case. There certainly may be some women who are doing so, but the long-term direction of change is toward women joining the workforce and looking more like men in their commitments to work. So in that sense, I think the recession actually reminded us of the long-term changes that are underway. And even after we have hopefully bounced back completely and are back on our way to economic growth, we are likely to continue to see these changes occur because they represent much more basic changes, both in the economy and in the lives of women and men and how they want to live in the 21st century.
And what are those long-term changes that are going to stay with us?
Well, there are a lot of them. I guess certainly at the top of the list are economic shifts in the kinds of jobs that we hold and the kind of careers that we build. The decline of manufacturing work and the rise of work that does require more education, more skill, more what you might think of as work that requires interpersonal skills and knowledge skills. So the kinds of jobs that we're going to rely on are more likely to draw in women as well as men. But it's also more changes in how men and women want to live. Women increasingly stress the importance of self-reliance in their lives, that whether or not they enter into a long-term marriage, which of course they want to do, as do men, they want to be able to support themselves. They want to find an identity outside of their commitments to husbands and children. They want to know that they will be okay even if their long-term commitments don't pan out. Just like men who we're comfortable seeing as stressing self-reliance and autonomy, women increasingly stress those desires as well. In fact, I think it probably is fair to say, I certainly found this in my research, just as in the Pew research, that women are stressing self-reliance even more than men, because they see it as fundamental to their own well-being, to the well-being of any children they might bear. And this is going to create both new challenges and new opportunities for workplaces and for families in the decades to come. The 21st century is really a very different place than the world that we lived in the 20th century.
We are talking about women and men and careers during this hour with Kathleen Gerson, who is a professor of sociology. We're talking about this Pew Research survey, which found that for the first time, more young women than young men think having a high-paying job and a successful career is an important life goal. And our first caller for her is Melissa in Menominee Falls. Hello, Melissa.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to say that when I got out of school, a lot of friends got married right away and had young children, and then their marriages broke up, and a lot of my friends ended up providing for their kids mostly by themselves for whatever reason. So before I got married and had kids, I went back to school in my late 20s and got a degree as a CPA just in case I ever got into a situation like that. Now, since then, I'm married and have a young child, but I know that if something should happen to my husband or our relationship, God forbid, that I would be able to provide for my daughter by myself. So that was my motivation in going back to school and getting a higher-paying career.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry if I'm prying, Melissa, but about how old are you?
Right now, I am 34.
Yeah, so you're in this area. What's your reaction to this, Professor Gerson?
It's exactly what I find young women saying from all sectors of our society. This is a very common theme among young women today, and I think one that recognizes the realities of the world we live in today. Melissa is I think exactly the kind of person that this poll reflects and is speaking to.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Melissa, for sharing your story. You know, there was another study in the news last week. This one was done by LinkedIn, that social or networking site, and Citi. I'm not quite sure what Citi is, but they did a survey, and it found that 96% of all women who responded to this survey think they can have it all when it comes to careers, financial security, and relationships. They want to have a successful career. They want to be in a loving, committed relationship. And apparently they also want children. At least they think it's all attainable. Is it all attainable?
Again, I want to add that's exactly what I find in my research as well. I think it's interesting that we use the phrase having it all as if somehow that we're asking too much out of life, when, in fact, having a good work life and a good home life are pretty basic human desires, and we shouldn't even be thinking that these were not reasonable desires. Is it attainable? That's a good question. I think the question isn't can we have it all, but how can we have it all in a way that is satisfying, makes us happy, and allows us both to be part of a thriving economy and raise happy children. And for that, we do need to rethink the way that we structure both work and child rearing to accommodate the needs of each. Yes, people can have it all, and in fact, I think have little choice but to try to have it all. But we do now need to think not about what it is that people want, because we know what they want. We need to think about how do we create the supports that make it possible to do this in a satisfying way. And that's the challenge for the coming years.
I mean, again, I promise we'd talk about those supports, but I want to get one more caller in before
sure.
before our news break. Kelsey in Madison. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi.
Yes, what's your comment or question?
Yeah, and it's very similar to what you were just speaking about, actually. I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday about being the daughter of a feminist or the daughter of someone that has a very strong mother figure, and that growing up we were always told that we can be whatever we want and we can do whatever we want. And the pressure of growing up knowing and having that mentality and then going out into the real world and trying to establish a career and trying to find these relationships and knowing that, in theory, the system isn't holding you back. So if you have difficulties in that, it becomes very much a problem with yourself and not a problem with the system.
Oh, did you find difficulties, Kelsey?
You know, I've had success. I am a recent enterer into the young professional world. That's gone very well for me. Obviously, I think there are more things on the personal side of the spectrum that need to be improved on, but in terms of my career, I'm in a good place, I feel.
Well, good. Thank you very much for sharing. And we will talk more about this issue coming up after we check the latest news. We are talking with Kathleen Gerson, a professor of sociology. She is the author of The Unfinished Revolution, Coming of Age in a New Era of Gender, Work, and Family. We welcome your input, too, whether you're a young woman or young man or not. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We're talking about a survey from Pew Research, which found two-thirds of young women, ages 18 to 34, rated career high on their list of life priorities, compared to 59% of young men. So for the first time in this survey anyway, more young women than young men think having a high-paying job is important or an important life goal. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, October the 22nd. We are talking about why this might be and what it means and welcoming your input, whether you're a young woman or a young man. How important is a high-paying career to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Kathleen Gerson, a professor of sociology. She is author of The Unfinished Revolution, Coming of Age in a New Era of Gender, Work, and Family. And Professor Gerson, our caller just before news time, did make the observation that she grew up with a mother who she said was a feminist and was telling her, you can be what you want to be. You should go to college. You should get a good job. And I think she was believing that's why we're seeing the number of young women who think this is important rise in these surveys. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. This change has been in the making for a very long time. And one of the things that I find in my research, which is, I think, interesting and a bit surprising, is that regardless of whether a young woman grew up in a home with a mom who did have a career and worked full-time or in a home that was more traditional, all of these young people, and this is the sons as well as the daughters, got the message that it was a good thing for women to work, and it was a good thing to have more egalitarian relationships. So there's certainly been a huge sea change in how this generation has grown up and what they expect of their lives going forward. And it's certainly true among those whose moms lived less traditional lives. But what's interesting is that it's also true among those whose moms didn't, because they also got the message both from their own parents and from the people around them that this was a good thing. On the other side of the ledger, however, which I also think that Kelsey alluded to, that was, and I think this is a good thing, actually. They were not told, oh, you're going to be facing all these obstacles, because you want to give children a sense of hope, a sense of optimism, that they can do everything that they want, and that they, if they apply themselves, they can achieve what they set out to do. This is important to give children this sense of hope and ambition. But it's also true that as this generation has come of age and gone into the quote-unquote real world, they have discovered that there are obstacles. In some sense, the first stage of this shift was to change people's hearts and minds, and now what they need to deal with are the actual obstacles that may lie in their way, and to change those as well.
Yeah. Now, it sounded like Kelsey said career-wise, job-wise, she didn't run into a lot of obstacles, but it was on the personal side and the relationship side where I guess she wasn't finding it yet. And it maybe that's because she's doing 80-hour weeks. I don't know.
Well, yes, I think it's probably the obstacles exist on both sides, even though we may be easier to see them in our personal relationships, harder to see them at work. It sort of depends on where you are in that process. Young women are postponing marriage and parenthood so that they can get not only get a secure and safe place at work, but also so that they can find the right relationship. Young adults are increasingly saying it's not just a matter of finding a partner. You want to find the right partner. You want to build the right kind of relationship. And that takes time, because it takes time to find out who you are. And it also takes time to find that place for yourself in the world. And both women and men feel quite strongly that until they feel more economically secure, that they know where they're going professionally, or in terms of work, because not all of them are professionals, that it's maybe premature to make that long-term commitment to a partner. So the challenges exist on both sides. But there are things I think we can do about it as a society. They're not all personal. And we do have this tendency to see these issues as personal obstacles that we need to solve on our own, rather than as shared challenges that we can tackle as a community.
So do we need to change our workplaces so they're more flexible, so women can go home and cook dinner, as Governor Romney said in last week's debate?
Well, or the men can go home and cook dinner as well. There are many ways in which we need to change work to make it more flexible. One of the things I'm finding in my current research, where I am looking at the kinds of strategies that workers in their 30s and 40s are pursuing, is that men are equally stressed about the time crunch and the insecurity they face on the jobs and the kind of difficulties they have in even asking for family time. So this is not just a women's mm-hmm. issue, and I think it's really important that we start to see it as a human issue rather than simply a women's issue.
Yeah.
I think that was Romney's mistake. All parents need to be able to go home, and they need to be able to decide for themselves how they want to find that mix of work and family life.
Mm-hmm. I love that, Kitty. It must be Kitty's breakfast time. I hear.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Lisa in La Crosse is with us. Hello, Lisa.
Good morning.
Morning.
I grew up in a very traditional home. My father was a dairy farmer, and my mother stayed home with us children. I'm the oldest of four, so I felt like it was my place to set a good example, and my parents also felt it was my place to set a good example for the younger three. I did go to college. It was more so my father who persuaded me to go. My mother also did, like I said, it was a very traditional home, and I was a first-generation college student to go, and after going to college and realizing all the opportunities out there, I pushed myself really hard. I now have a great job. I've only been in the working world for about 3 years, but I met my husband when I was in high school, and typically I feel like most of my friends who did go to college didn't stay with the men that they had dated in high school. My husband did not go to college, and a lot of my friends see that as being odd. He's not someone who I depend on for financial stability, and I feel like that almost freed me up to love him more because I don't have to depend on him. So
wonderful. Well, congratulations on your success, and is your husband, is he in the farming industry?
Yes, yeah. My husband is a dairy farmer, yes.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Professor Grissom, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very well said. It points out that the more options women have, the more options men have as well. It gives us an opportunity to make our choices based on factors beyond economic ones, which marriage used to be an economic bargain. And the irony is that now we can see marriage as something that people look for far more than economic security. They look for the right partner, for mutual support, for personal satisfaction. And so this is one of the benefits. May a thousand different options bloom, and rather than saying that we all have to somehow fit into one pattern.
I'm happy for you, Lisa, but I'm wondering, Professor Grissom, she says her friends look at this as odd that she's married to someone who's, not also a college graduate in some highfalutin career.
Right, and again, if the genders were reversed,
yeah,
this wouldn't be the case. So I think, I think we have to look forward to a future where it will seem far less odd than her friends may see it today. I think that is the world we're moving into, one in which we don't assume that women and men will take certain positions in a marriage, and that they can build the kinds of lives they want and have the kinds of differences that they choose, rather than there having to be a straightforward role for a woman and a man. So that is the future, and it's one that I think we will benefit from.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, thank you so much for the call. Greg in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Greg.
Oh, hello. I raised my daughter by myself. My wife sort of took off when she was 4 months old. She just didn't want to have kids. So every single time I picked her up, or I changed her diaper, she got colicky and stuff, I'd walk the floors and I'd sing hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 8, 21, 24, 27, 34, 12, 4/3 pi r cubes, volume of a sphere, stuff like that. And she got a master's degree. And I thought, wow, this is great. She's going to have a better life than I had, probably. And she ended up getting married to an engineer. And then she quit work to have babies. And I'm looking at this. She just paid off $28,000 in student loans for her master's. And I'm looking at this as, well, what is wrong with her? She's wasting all of this. Mm-hmm. She could go take the kids to daycare, but no, she wants to be a stay-at-home mom.
No, and you're disappointed in that, Greg.
I'm disappointed in the fact that for her adolescence, I taught her. I even picked up cocoons from silk moths and let all of her friends watch them hatch. I made a big cage in the garage and let them all hatch, and they hatch in late June, and they'd all come and they'd they're just amazed at these big moths that crawl
over. Well, Greg, you sound like you're a cool dad. should he be disappointed that his very smart master degree daughter decided to give up work for raising children?
I do think that's a really good point. And I think it does, I guess I would say two things. The first is that it does point to how important we do consider work and achievement in this society. And is it the right thing for everyone? And that's a question I think we all have to answer for ourselves. But the second thing I would add is that, and this I think is important and comes out in the poll that we're discussing, women, even though women may start out with very high aspirations, when children are born, they don't have the kind of supports they need to continue to work. And we do see a reversal starting to happen that even though those aspirations remain high, there's a crunch time that forces especially young mothers to have to make these choices. And we need more daycare. We need more high-quality daycare. And we need a culture that says that it's all right for mothers as well as fathers to continue to work hard even when their children are young. Young fathers face the opposite pressure, which is to have to put in more time at work. So I can understand Greg's disappointment, and that is a very personal thing. And it is, I'm sure, my guess is that his daughter also probably feels disappointed that she's put so much effort into something that she's going to have to pull back on. But what I would argue, again, is that if we really are serious about creating those life paths through careers as well as through parenthood, then we need to change both the cultural and the policy supports that young parents have so that they can negotiate this very crucial time and transition in their own lives and in their children's lives in a way that doesn't force them to have to choose between a satisfying work life and a sense of caring for their children.
Yeah. Do you see those changes, those policy changes coming?
That's my phone in the background. That's a good question, and I think the answer is still remains up in the air. There's no question that we are facing this crunch and that it is going to continue to grow. But there is, I think, a great question about how we are going to resolve it. And so far, we have left this up to individual parents to shoulder on their own. And some have the resources to do so, both economic resources and the support of families and just their own emotional resources. But most people are really struggling at this stage. And if we want to make it possible for those aspirations of young women and men to be reached, then we really do have to face this. This is the next challenge. If the first challenge is the one that that the young woman described about growing up in a world where she was encouraged to have aspirations, and that Greg described about his own daughter, then now the challenge is to create a world where those aspirations can actually be reached and accomplished.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Kathleen Gerson, professor of sociology at New York University and author of The Unfinished Revolution, Coming of Age in a New Era of Gender, Work, and Family. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. It is time now for our Monday morning wake-up call, and today we will wonder why 2012 is shaping up to be one of the deadliest years for motorcyclists. Our guest is Jason Herheim, lead motorcycle safety instructor at Madison College. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us. Well, according to this news report, so far 102 people have been killed in motorcycle crashes this year. That's compared to 85 for all of 2011.
I could only wish that number was still accurate.
Oh, now it's even higher. More have died since this news report.
Unfortunately, that's the case. And of course, I don't have this weekend's numbers. I did a little digging and asking some questions of the folks over at the Wisconsin Motorcycle Safety Program, and we're at least at 109, which puts us one off, which is definitely not something to be proud of. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge.
Yeah, that would be close to a record year too. That's we're not through with the year.
Yeah,
why do we think this is happening?
Well, when I happen to be looking at a spreadsheet with some numbers on it right now, and the other high year, at least from what I have sitting in front of me, is looking at 2007. If you compare similarities that I can think of off the top of my head without hard facts, fuel prices are one of the biggest things that I'm thinking that are going to push people to attempt to ride on two wheels due to the perceived fuel economy savings. When you're looking at $4 a gallon for gasoline, give or take, we're going to want to do it as cheaply as possible. And it looks like you ride two wheels around and can get 40, 50 miles to the gallon regularly. It's pushing people to find new ways to do it cheaper.
Yeah, and there was a lot of nice weather much earlier this year, too. So it's theorized that people were out more.
Yeah, with a complete lack of rain throughout the summer, anybody who would have been a fair weather rider certainly had a lot of fair weather to procrastinate and eventually pull their motorcycles out and go for a ride.
And I apologize. I see that your title is that you are program director for motorcycle safety at Madison College. What about are motorcyclists a little less safe these days?
Well, looking back, last year was a better year for motorcycle fatalities at 85. More on their plates right now than I think we have in years past. Along with the task of operating a motorcycle, you now have to deal with everything else that's going on that's just increased to the point that we actually had somebody write a law that said you shouldn't text or cannot text and drive. We needed a law to tell people that that was a bad idea.
You know, motorcyclists aren't doing that, are they?
No, certainly not. But with everything else, you know, you're another road user.
Right.
How visible is a motorcyclist to begin with? Plus, then take that onto the position of somebody else that's not checked in with their driving.
Do we know if these motorcycle accidents or crashes are mostly an impact with a car?
No, I do not know personally. Were they impacted with cars or somebody sent me a link to one earlier from July in Wanakee that was an impact with the car. Then definitely one of those things that what happened, well, like the bicyclist on the around the Highway M hit by somebody who was asleep.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm very short on time here, but I also see here that some of the motorcyclists are maybe a little rusty, though. They're getting on motorcycles for the first time in a long time.
That definitely could be the case. In addition to having people, like I said, those fair weather riders who might have had a motorcycle in the garage for years, they could definitely sharpen up their skills before they go out there. One of the other questions in play is, when's the last time the motorcycle itself has been checked out, if it's been in the garage for years?
Yeah.
Or if people are looking for an easy, a cheaper mode of transportation, getting one on Craigslist, you got a great, cheap, inexpensive motorcycle, but did you take it to a reputable dealer to get it checked out?
Yeah.
So, yes, Madison College and others offer basic rider courses. We also offer some shorter skills refresher courses out there for people, and hopefully people can check them out on our website.
Will do. Thank you so much for being with us. Jason Herheim is the program director for motorcycle safety at Madison College. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and Jennifer Dargan and Amanda Magnus for producing these programs. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.